Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Hi, I'm Connie Whitman, your host. My motivational quote today is by Jeannie McElvaney. I hope I said that right. And she says, "You can recognize survivors of abuse by their courage. When silence is so very inviting, they step forward and share their truth so others know they aren't alone." This powerful quote has a key word that I really want to focus the show on today, and that word is courage. There are so many forms of abuse, right? There's verbal abuse, physical abuse, psychological abuse, and the list just keeps going on. Most of us only shudder as we watch, you know, the 6 o'clock news and hear about a child that was abused in some remote part of the country, not thinking that this abuse can actually happen in our own backyard. The reality is there are many who have lived through abuse, survived it, and have found the courage to speak up about it with the hope of being able to help one other abused soul. I'm honored to have my guest today, Barbara Jean Wilson. Barbara is one of the courageous women who has chosen to stand up and speak out by telling her story of how she has survived and has chosen to thrive in her adult life. Let me tell you a little bit about Barb. She was born and raised in Flushing, New York, my sister next door. I'm a Jersey girl. She relocated to Manassas, Virginia in 1995, and she accepted a legal secretary position with a law firm in Washington, D.C. In 2003, Barbara enrolled at Strayer University in Manassas and graduated with a bachelor's degree in business administration in 2008. In 2009, Barbara put her full concentration on the completion of her first book, which she began writing in 2003. The name of the book is Mute, But Now I Speak, and that was completed in 2010 and published in February of 2011. Please help me welcome my very courageous and my very special guest, Barbara Wilson. So, Barb, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Connie. It's an honor, and I'm humbled.
I am humbled by you, my friend. We met in May, right? It's got to be May now, that at the international conference, right?
Yes, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the Women Economic Forum.
Yeah, unfortunately that feels like yesterday.
I know.
And time flies crazy. But we met, we hit it off, and we were like, all right, we got to do this show. So I think it's a sad but a very important topic, and your courage in writing this book, I can only imagine the hours that were put into it, and truly a labor of love, wanting to help someone else out there. So my first question, Barb, is, was your abuser a stranger or someone you actually knew?
It was someone that I knew. It was my mother's boyfriend, but the others that he brought around were strangers. So I wasn't just sexually abused by her boyfriend, but it was also, let me just back up. The first time it happened, when I told my mother, she had said, "Don't tell anyone, because that's how the rent is getting paid." And that's where the strangers came in. Even though she didn't know about the strangers, he would take my mother, you know, out to play cards, because she would play cards on Friday nights. And when he would drop her off, that's when he would bring men over to do whatever it was that they wanted to do with me. So it was a stranger and someone I knew.
Did you trust him initially, like before this went on? Did you trust him? Did he appear to be a good guy?
Not, you know, the first time that we met him, me and my sisters, actually, it was on a Sunday. He and my mother came and picked us up from church, because we went to church with my great aunt. And the moment I got in the car and I just looked at his face, it was just something about his face that I didn't like. So I have to say that from the very beginning, I knew something wasn't right with him. I just didn't know what it was.
How old were you when this started happening?
I was 8 years old. and it went on until I was 13.
Did he abuse your sisters as well? You mentioned sisters.
Yeah, no, I asked them, and they said no, and I actually believe that he didn't, I believe them, that he didn't bother them at all.
Do you know why he zeroed in on you? Were you the oldest? No,
I'm the youngest, but I was more developed than my I'm still more developed than both my older sisters. So I think that had a lot to do with it, looking at statistics or watching videos, I noticed, you know, with most children, especially those that are more developed at a younger age, they tend to be the victims quicker than, I don't know, for some reason, older men tend to have their eyes peeled on them.
It's sick. It's just so gross. Yeah, it's grossly sick. And, you know, how did you feel? Because you obviously you trusted your mom. And then when you were 8 years old when you told her this, right, that this was going on.
Yes. Well, once I told her and she told me that, then I just had to deal with it because, I mean, your mother is your first protector. And
yeah.
When she said that, it was like, who else would I tell? Because would they give me the same answer? You know, how much did anyone else know? You know, did my father know? Did my aunts and my uncles, did they know about it? And if so, it didn't make sense for me to say anything to them because she already told me what was going on. And so at that point, I just dealt with it. And there was a time when I could have shared, because I remember running away from home. I actually ran to my father's house, and she came with the police officers, and I could have told at that moment. But at this point, we're talking about maybe 2 years. My mind was so not so much twisted, but to the point where the trust was gone, that I didn't even trust the police. I thought that they were in cahoots with her.
Yeah. Well, you're a child. Think about it. You were 8 to 10 years old. That's the child's thought of, you know, you can't trust adults. They all betray you. Later on, did your aunts and uncles and dad know, or they were flabbergasted when this all came out?
When I became, because at this point now I'm an adult and I'm, you know, on my own. And and I remember we were having Thanksgiving dinner at my aunt's house. And I was in the kitchen washing dishes and she came in. And she had asked me, she said, you know, Barbara Jean, because they call me, you know, by my full name.
Yes.
Barbara Jean, she says, I have a question to ask you. And I was like, sure. And she says, you know, when you were little, did Bob ever touch you? And I said, yes. She says, I thought so. I said, you thought so? She said, I had a feeling he was doing something to you. And I looked at it and I said, well, why didn't you say anything? Even if you were just thinking it, you know, why didn't you say anything? I said, instead, you know, you just let me endure it. Everyone just let me go through it. And she says, you know, I didn't, you know, I was, she said, I was just thinking it. I wasn't for sure. But for you to even think that.
Right.
You know,
fear.
What made you think it? Right. What made you think it? So at that point, that's when she was letting me know that she had an idea. But once when I decided to write the book, I had actually met with my pastor, and he had told me before you write the book, you need to meet with your family and you need to sit down, not only talk to them about you writing the book, but you also need to seek their forgiveness and you need to forgive them and especially your father. And I said, why do I need to forgive my father? And he said, because if your father was still in the household, this wouldn't have happened. And I never thought of it like that.
Wow.
And, So when I did meet with all of them, and I told them, you know, I'm writing the book, and it's not to hurt any of them, but it's to heal me, because I had to get in the healing process.
Yes.
And so some of them were supportive, some of them wasn't. But at that point, it didn't matter, because now it was about me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it wasn't until the book came out, because now they all have accepted and they have embraced me with love and asked for forgiveness and what have you. But once the book came out, my father called me one Mother's Day to not only wish me a happy Mother's Day, but to ask me for forgiveness. And I said, "Why are you asking me for forgiveness?" He said, "Because I did not know it was that bad." And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "I read the book," he says, "but I did not know it was that bad." And so I said, "So you knew what was going on?" He says, "Yes." He said, "But I didn't want to do anything because I didn't want to make matters worse." So I said, "But how can it get any worse than that?"
Yeah.
And he says, I know. I says, "You know, my childhood was destroyed. Everything about, you know, growing up was destroyed." I says, "You know, and to think that when I was acting out, instead of everyone embracing the fact that she's acting out because she's being abused,
mm-hmm.
instead you were ignoring that part of it and saying that I was just being a bad child."
Mm-hmm.
You know, to the point of even getting kicked out of school because we don't understand why she's bad, why she's talking back to adults, why she's doing all of this. And I'm sitting there, you know, in the principal's office, and I'm looking at them, and I'm looking at the principal, and it's like they're sitting here lying to you because they know why I'm acting the way I'm acting. But you're part of the game, too, so whatever.
And that's what it became. You were part of the game.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
So I had no trust for any adult, none whatsoever.
Now, I just a couple of comments, Barb, and thank you for sharing. That's very, very personal. So, you know, thank you for sharing this. And I think it's so important. You know, the show is about change, right? That we all have to change in some way, some form throughout our life, over and over and over again. To think what you went through and the strength that you had and the ability to forgive, that this is horrifying on such a large scale, right? That you were able to come through this, write a book so that you could possibly help other people. The courage, your mental prowess that you were, that I'm blown away. And when I met you, I think I mentioned this as well. Everybody thinks they have problems. There are people out there with real freaking problems like what you're describing and surviving and living through and now living a thriving life. You have a beautiful daughter. We were talking about her. She's been working for 20 years at the post office. That blew my mind too. But you've created this amazing life. You've written this, you know, amazing, powerful book that needed to be shared with the world. So talk about taking lemons and making lemonade. So people who are struggling out there, and that's why I asked you to be on the show, because I do realize change, no matter what it is for people, it's a struggle, and I get it. So I when I met you, and you're so powerful and courageous and loving and wonderful, and you have a great demeanor and a great energy, for me, I thought it was important for you to share your story that no matter how bad things are, change is possible. You just have to take control. And I think you did that really well, even as a child, even as an eight-year child, while it was going on, that you were able to survive that, to me is remarkable. And I commend you. I just commend you. We have to take a break. When we come back, I want to understand how, while this was going on, and again, it started at 8, it finished when you were 13, you were a baby that whole time. For me, a 13-year-old is still a baby. How did you survive the events and then, like you said, this huge betrayal where you became part of a game in your mind? Just think about that during break, and if you could share that, you know, that survival mechanism, what was it for you? I think that will help people as well who are in the throes of something that is change-related and they don't know where to go. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, cool. All right, so we'll take a really quick break, and then I would just love to hear how you truly survived this and is just thriving now. I'm beyond impressed by you.
Thank you.
It's a shame when you're feeling stuck in your business and you feel like you have nowhere to turn. It's a shame when you slog through long days in your business and you don't get any return. It's a shame when you feel like you can't see the forest for the trees and your business brings you to your knees. Einstein said repeating the same actions over and over won't produce different results. So stop feeling ashamed. Your business and you deserve better. Change that shame into righteous fame. Connie Whitman can tame that shame. Connie Whitman of Whitman Associates will help you to discover your new path, and nothing will ever be the same. Connie's tried and true one-on-one coaching sessions will tame that shame so you and your business will not continue in vain. Call Connie Whitman of Whitman Associates today at 732-888-1420. That's 732-888-1420. Or email connie@whitmanassociates.com. Call Connie. Turn that shame into your game.
We are back. We are speaking with my good buddy, Barbara Wilson, and we're talking about her new amazing book, Mute, But Now I Speak, and really the atrocities that you lived through, Barb, and that you're able to share it is, oh my goodness, I think that, and be able to speak about it with such clarity is really, really very important for those that are out there dealing with abuse or some kind of change that they feel that they don't have control over. So how did you survive it? Did you have a strategy? Did you have a defense mechanism? Like, how did that work for you?
The thing that happened was with several of the strangers, they got me involved in alcohol and in drugs. And so being high took my mind off of what was happening to me and what they were doing to me. And I just kept saying, eventually this will all be over. Eventually this will all be over. And that's how, and I just kept that in my mind and knowing that, someone is going to protect me. At the time I didn't know who, but someone has to find out and they're going to rescue me. In the meantime, I just stayed high. During the week, I mean, my saving grace that I felt freedom was, you know, Monday. Well, it was Monday through Friday because I had, I was going to school. So I knew that nothing was going to happen with them. But with my mother boyfriend, yes, because he worked at night. So he would be home when I got home from school. So what I would do, because he would leave home at 3 o'clock. 3-4 o'clock. So what I would do, I just wouldn't go straight home from school. And I knew that I would get in trouble, but I would rather get in trouble than to have to deal with him. Or if I came home, I always came home with friends. This way I knew I was safe. So that's how I was able to protect myself from him touching me during the course of the week.
You couldn't confide in one of your, you were all little children at the time, but there wasn't even a friend that you felt you can confide in because they probably would have told their parents, like that you felt that alone?
Yeah, I'm not only feeling alone, but it's like, who could I trust?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, trust was...
One thing about trust, you know, once trust is broken, it's hard, you know, to build it back up. It takes a lot. And when it's broken by the very person who's supposed to protect you, which is your mother or your father, how can you then go to someone else? And how do I know that they're not, you know, say, for instance, a friend, how do I know that they're not going through the same thing?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and they're not talking about it. And so it's something that you just hold on to and you just put on a happy face. Because the one thing that that I learned, you know, later on and even in sharing my story once I started speaking about it, and the people that I, you know, actually grew up with and hung out with, people that I work with, they're like, Barbara, you know, to see you, to know you, and to read your story, it's like, wow, you have a heart of gold, and you're willing to help anyone and everyone, and to think that you lived a life of hell, and yet you mm-hmm. have no hate in you. You have no mm-hmm. hate, no bitterness, no animosity. And I think that's because right before the abuse happened, 2 weeks before I got baptized. And I didn't realize it. It was during one of my interviews that the interviewer had brought it to my attention that, you know, you got baptized 2 weeks before. That was God's way of saying, I know what's about to happen to you, but I'm going to protect your soul. They'll have your body, but I will protect your soul.
Absolutely.
And so from what I got from that was he put a whole shield around my heart so that no bitterness would enter, no hate, only love and forgiveness and compassion. And so that's where all of that comes from.
I have to tell you, that to me is remarkable, and I'm sure everybody listening to your story is saying, you got to be kidding. You know, you would want to kill the person. Not that we validate death, right, or killing someone, but I can't imagine not feeling that you want to hurt them the way they hurt you. So, yeah, I think that's a beautiful answer or reason of why. Because you really, it's so funny, right? When we met we met in a parking garage and we hugged each other. Your energy is just beyond lovely. So, and then for me to hear your story later that night, I was like, say what? Like, are you kidding me? It's shocking because you really are. You do have a beautiful energy. So that well said with the baptism, isn't that interesting? How interesting is that? Okay, so I have another question. Mm-hmm. Going through this, and that was, you know, you had 5 years of true hell. Did you ever, and also drinking and being high and your little body, I can't even imagine because you were such a child, right?
Yes.
Did you ever think about giving up, ending it, you know, throwing in the towel? Did that even ever occur to you?
No, because I knew that I wouldn't be small always. I knew that I was growing up, and I knew that there would be an opportunity when, you know, I could leave home. So I never thought about, you know, taking my life or doing anything that was going to harm me, because I knew that there was a purpose for me being here. I didn't know at the time what. But I knew that there was a purpose for me being here.
And, even you know, as
and,
I'm sorry,
and,
again.
And you know, it also was because I didn't want to leave my mother. I love my mother with all my heart. Even though she could have saved me, but I loved her, and so it meant, you know, when she said the rent is getting paid, this is how the rent is getting paid. Whatever it took for me to help my mother, then that's what it was going to take for me to help my mother. Because, you know, from reading the Bible, in the commandments, and it says, honor thy mother and thy father.
Yes.
And that's what I, you know, honored them, didn't, you know, no disrespect. And so, I mean, even though in Proverbs, it also says that the parents shouldn't anger their children. But I just felt like I had to honor and I had to obey her, but I also had to protect her. And if it meant me going through this to protect her, then that's what I was going to do. So I was able to, you know, forgive her and still love her, even through all of this, was able to forgive her and love her.
As an adult, now that you're an adult, I'm sure you did research. Did you go through a lot of counseling too after the fact when you realized that this truly was abnormal and bad? Did you go through counseling?
Yes, I did. Went through counseling. Went through counseling for about maybe 3 or 4 years. And it was talking to me about the steps that I needed to take in order to freely release and to become, you know, whole again. And it was something that I wasn't ready, you know, to do, which was to share. But it also kept eating at me hearing, you know, how others have gone through and had given up on life and,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it was drugs, alcohol, or in jail. And mm-hmm. it's, you know, and I looked at myself and it's like, how can you walk around feeling healed, whole, knowing what got you through it, and yet you don't want to share it to help others to get through? You're being selfish. And that's, once I met with my pastor and I shared with him and his wife, he's like, you know, whatever it takes, we will help you, but you need to share your story. You need to tell your story. There's so many people out there suffering because they think that it's just them or they have no place to turn. And so that's
just like you felt. But that's how you felt, Barb, right, living through it, that you truly were isolated and alone, and you were playing their game, right?
Yes. But once I left home, then I just started working on me. There was a lot of anger. And then I started doing things to myself to cope with it. You know, since I was already introduced to drugs and alcohol,
sure.
You know, I started getting into the drugs and alcohol and actually prostituting myself out. You know, because I was, you know, became a young mother and, you know, had to pay the rent. And so, and it was, of course, instilled in my mind, that's how the rent get paid, so this is what you do. But the difference was I was going to do the picking and choosing as far as who I was going to be with. And, you know, and even with the drugs and alcohol, and I've tried everything under the sun. And so I can truly say that it's only by the grace of God that I am truly a survivor, because I know so many people and I've been around to see so many people lose their lives, you know, whether it's from the alcohol or from the drugs or just even from, you know, the prostituting and the various
sure.
diseases that are out there.
Sure.
I was saved from all of that, and I truly believe I was saved from all of that in order to help others who truly are going through, and still going through, and they've just given up, or they've lost hope, or they have nowhere to turn, which is one of the things that I've, you know, would like to do, and I've actually have to do a lot of reading up on it, starting a nonprofit 501. 501(c)(3), I believe, like a safe haven for men and women and young people to come to be able to talk about it and to be able to share and to feel safe.
Yes, and for you to provide alternatives that they're not isolated, right, and that there is help and there is ways to stop the abusers out there. It's brilliant. Now, excuse me, were you able during this whole healing process, and I give you a lot of credit for being able to deal with that anger and hatred and just your whole life, that what you were put through even after the fact, like you said, the prostitution, the drugs, etc., and surviving all of that hell, were you ever able to confront the abuser, and if so, like, how did you not, like, rip his face off? I have to be honest, Barb.
No, because they died. They all died. So I was able to. I was able to forgive them, you know, by going to there, because I had to forgive in order to move on.
And
I, you know, was able to forgive them. And my mother, you know, right before she died, because she got sick, and I, you know, took care of my mother. I moved her into, you know, my apartment when I was still living in New York, and took care of her. And when she went into the hospital, she asked if she could talk to me, and so we had a very long talk. And, you know, she asked if I could forgive her, and I told her I forgave you a long time ago.
Wow.
And she says, you know, I am so sorry for destroying your life. she said, and yet through it all, you never stopped loving me. You know, whenever I needed something, you were there. She says, you know, why would you do that after what I, because she was very protective of my two older sisters, and that's another reason why I believe that nothing ever happened to them, because she was very protective of them. And she says, you know, why would you do that? And I told her, I said, because you're my mother and I love you and I honor you. And, you know, so she says, you know, I am so, so sorry that, you know, I destroyed your life. She says, but it's now time for you, you know, to live and to get on with your life and not worry about anyone else. And probably 2 days later is when she died.
Wow. Wow. That was powerful, right?
Yes, yes. And the thing is, she had a huge smile on her face when she passed, and everyone was, you know, that came to me when they came to the wake. They was like, Barbara, your mother has this beautiful smile on her face. I said, because she's at peace.
Yeah.
Because I had forgiven her, you know.
Yeah.
And so at that point, it was... Because I remember telling her, she doesn't have to worry about my sisters. I'll look out for them. And she's like, no, it's time for you to live. And so at that point, that's when I just started preparing to move forth. And that's how I ended up here in Virginia. I came down one of my cousins, she says, if you ever need a break, feel free to come and visit me, and you can stay for however long you want to stay. And I remember coming to Virginia. And I said, this is where I need to be.
Yeah.
And I started looking for work. And so everything, the process of me starting to release everything was started here in Virginia.
That's awesome. The path was that you were guided through, really, when you tell your story and the book, you really were guided, believe it or not, even through the hell. You know, you were guided, and like you said, your soul was protected. Now, in retrospect, looking back, but at the time, you know, you can't see the forest from the trees. And I know a lot of people listening to the show feel lost, and I get it. I get it, and I hope your story inspires them, Barb. And I really I want to tell them the book again and where to find it, because we are out of time. But I do recommend that everybody buy the book. It's called Mute, But Now I Speak. And if you go to Barb's website, it's www.mutebutnowispeak.com. And they could get the book there, right, Barbara? And Amazon too, probably, right?
Amazon, Kindle, Barnes & Noble.
Right, all of it.
Yes. But one thing that I want to leave off and just let the audience know, you know, whenever you're out driving about, walking, you know, and you see a homeless person, you know, whether it's an alcoholic, a junkie, or even a pregnant teen or a prostitute, don't talk about them. You know, if you can't do anything else, just, you know, if you can, pray for them, because you don't know what got them out in the street.
Yep.
And by the grace of God, he gave me the strength to not be out there, but to actually be their spokesperson, because that could have been me. It could be any of us.
That's right.
You know, so don't know why they're out there. Some, you know, when you talk to, especially like young ladies, and you hear their stories of why they ran away from home, and they're the most vulnerable, because some will ran away because being abused by a stepfather. The unfortunate thing for young ladies is like when they're running away, and you know this, Connie, some of them, you know, they catch the bus to go to Times Square, to Port Authority. That's where they are picked up by pimps.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they are prostituted out on 42nd Street and, you know, or trafficking. So they think that they're running away from something that's being done to them bad, and they're actually running more into it, thinking that the person that's coming to rescue them is going to save them, and instead of putting them right back in it. So I always say, you know, when you see people out there, just don't look down on them, because they're seeking help.
Yeah. Everybody's got a story, Barb. Everybody's got a burden. Everybody's got on their journey. And how dare we judge? And you know, my mom always says, walk in my shoes before you judge me. Whew, isn't that a true statement?
Yes,
because
it
you
is.
you don't know what people are going through. And how dare we look down upon somebody else? Because really, we're not better than anybody else. That's the reality. We're humans living amongst humans. And I love what you said. Even if you can't give them money or buy them food or whatever it is, or don't judge, don't talk about them, just send them love and say a prayer for them because they're on whatever journey they're on. Barb, thank you so much for your candor, for your, I think, very inspiring story, and I hope that somebody listening found comfort in what you're saying, and I really hope people buy your book. Also, if they have questions for you, they can email you. And you do respond, go to mute, but now I speak at Verizon.net. And don't worry, I will put Barbara's all her contact information, the website and her email address on the Web Talk Radio Architect of Change platform. And you guys, I backlink it, you guys click go, and you'll be able to find Barbara. Also, if you have stories or, excuse me, you'd like a topic for me to cover, you could contact me directly at my email address, Connie@WhitmanAssoce.com, and I do promise I respond personally. Okay, Barb, thank you again. It was lovely chatting with you. I hope I get to see you at our next conference.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you for having me on your show.
Truly a pleasure, truly a pleasure, and I hope everybody goes out there. I think the book helps all of us, not just people of abuse. I think it helps all of us on our journey of figuring out what the correct path is. But there's always a correct path for us to embrace and follow and become the people that we want to become, right?
Yes, 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 indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, so thank you again and for inspiring us today. I hope you guys will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together how to grow and challenge ourselves so we all embrace change, like Barbara did, and realize that change is possible and probably easier than we often think. If Barbara can do it, all of us can do it. Thank you, everyone. Please go out and have an inspired week.
You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. To learn more about Connie, visit her website, WhitmanAssoc.com. Thank you for tuning in. We're glad you were here.